Hello, I'm Georgina Robinson.
And I'm Tom Deason.
Welcome to the Rugby World Cup Daily. Coming to you from Japan every day throughout the 2019 Rugby World Cup.
G'day everyone and welcome to another Rugby World Cup Daily podcast. We are sitting here in the same venue as yesterday at my team hotel. I'm wearing more appropriate attire. The law has been laid down, but I'm nonetheless having a drink as well. After
Look, I wouldn't call it my Me Too moment with you, but I think your slippers are an improvement.
Yeah, they're not too bad.
No dressing gown, just slippers.
What are we going to talk about today?
What aren't we going to talk about today, Tommy? We are going to cover off the teams.
I was dripping a little bit with sarcasm. Oh. What a day.
What a day. Teams, the Hodge latest. What else?
Bit of stuff in the cauliflower, Warren Gatland, Hodge fallout, more fallout.
Plenty of stuff. But, yeah.
You went down to where the Wallabies are staying for a Michael Checker press conference. You had the hottest ticket in town. How was that? Straight off the top, he had something to say.
Checker never disappoints, right? We're 4 years in. Occasionally, you know, you get used to Michael Checker's ways. He doesn't mind a siege mentality. It's something he goes to often. And he's got this one well and truly going, you know, us against them. No one thinks we can do anything. No one believes. Got a lot of that. But we, and occasionally as a journalist, you get a little bit over it. But we were talking afterwards, a few of us, and we reflected on a few of the other coaches we've covered. And Robbie Deans is a worthy comparison point because Robbie, unlike Michael Checker, gave very little away. There was enough drama because his players were, you know, James O'Connor version one, Quade Cooper version one, Curtly Beale version one.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of head nodding and a lot of half sentences and a lot of deflections. So, you know, there are no complaints about covering a guy like Michael Checker who wears his heart on his sleeve quite often, fires up quite often, and is naturally in his DNA on the defensive. And there was plenty of it today. What he opened with was a crack at World Rugby's judicial panel led by the New Zealander Nigel Hampton QC for I think what Australia thinks is a pretty selective little written judgment on the Hodge suspension, and Hodge was singled out for what the panel thought was a concerning lack of detail on World Rugby's, wait for the technical term, dangerous tackle framework or high tackle framework. And Michael Checker just wanted to nip that in the bud straight away because there's been a lot of criticism, you know, from the Northern Hemisphere, from the UK and Ireland in particular, about, you know, how disgraceful it is to see that Reece Hodge didn't know about this tackling framework. And Michael Checker's point was, of course, Reece Hodge didn't know the absolute intricate detail of the high tackle framework, one, because it's designed for referees, and two, as we pointed out in Friday's podcast, these guys learn about the correct tackling framework. So that's the detail there across. And Reece Hodge spends all his time learning to tackle, you know, low. He failed in this one, and that's why he's got a ban for 3 weeks. But anyway, that's the starting point of the Michael Checker press conference today. And maybe we could leave Reece Hodge to one side now. But
yeah, perhaps.
You know, it kind of went
just quickly
from there.
On that. Do you believe that by having this siege mentality, that perhaps breeds some degree of an excuse there, you know, saying that, you know, Orbit said the World Rugby was against them, you know. It's, you know, he's probably saying to them the media is too, and, you know, former Wallabies or everyone is against us. Is that a hard done by story that players could sort of blame on if things don't go their way?
I'd be staggered if 50% of the playing group actually believes it. I mean, I think 50% of that playing group has been around the traps long enough to kind of know that it's worth buying into for the ultimate goal, and they'll take any bit of ammunition or motivation they can get. But a guy like Matt Tamua, Adam Ashley Cooper, Bernard Foley, I don't think they actually think people are out to get them or the world is against them. But I think there are definitely guys who, you know, haven't been coached by Cheka before who this would be really effective on. And ultimately, I also think around the group, no, I don't think anyone can take that as an excuse. I do think genuinely they feel very aggrieved over the Reece Hodge stuff. But I think more broadly, Michael Checker's using it as a nice little distraction. So his team can continue their preps, and then Michael can just, you know, front the media, talk about everything other than the footy and what's at stake and his huge selection gamble.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, he touched on it shortly after their victory over Fiji that maybe in the halves he was thinking about swapping it up, and we weren't sure whether he was going to do that, but he has. Obviously, Nick White, Christian Leilifano, see you later. Obviously, Nick's still on the bench, Christian not in the 23. Then the other big one was Kirtley Beale, a guy who, you know, when I wrote my piece last week talking about the Wallabies team that no one thought was going to be possible a year ago, you also would have said that, imagine Kirtley Beale not being in your starting 15 for that Wales game, which everyone's targeted. So that's all. That was a little surprising to a certain extent, even though I've said before I don't think Kirtley played very well. But you can understand why they're doing that. Wales are going to kick higher. Kirtley is a bit susceptible there. They've gone for Dane Haylett-Petty at the back. And Adam Ashley-Cooper to start on the wing in a fourth World Cup.
Tommy, can we just go back to Wednesday night at about, I don't know, 7:45 in Tokyo after the Reece Hodge stakeout, when we were spitballing after the suspension came down the options, and one of the options was the straight swap, Dane Haylett-Petty in on the wing.
Yeah.
And the other one we canvassed was a bit more tinkering, and that's benching Kirtley, Dane at fullback, and perhaps bringing in Adam Ashley Cooper onto the wing. So, you know, we did cover it. We did then go, and I think on Thursday we said he'd pick and stick, but we had it there.
Michael today said, though, in his press conference, it wasn't reactionary, right? Like
about form, he said, yeah.
Mm. Well, I mean, but then didn't he also say that they had already planned this out a while ago, you know, despite saying that, you know, it was one game at a time and it was Fiji first and nothing had been talked about for Wales? So
yeah.
Go figure. But
go figure. This is classic coaching. You know, he's given us about three different explanations in the one media conference and in the space of a week. I do think he was rigidage when he said that they were looking at this kind of halves combo for in the lead up to the World Cup. He also said that obviously we had to go through the selection process and take whatever we learned out of the Fiji game. And what did they learn from the Fiji game? They learned that the Wallabies lacked a bit of footy smarts, actually, in the heat of the moment. You know, Nick White and Christian did it a little bit in front of the goalposts, like pressure on in their 22, and as soon as Will Gettier came on, any time that happened, he'd be kicking the ball and relieving some pressure. So I think he's definitely responded to that. The only other thing I think he didn't actually specifically touch on, but I think is definitely worth mentioning, is that you think about the year or the 2 years Christian Leilifano's had. He hasn't played this much footy in a long, long time. We all know about his backstory, his battle with leukemia.
Mm.
I think there's some wear and tear at play with Christian Leilifano, and perhaps his repeat efforts and some of his reaction times, maybe the metrics. You know, we know that these guys are monitored within an inch of their life. Perhaps that also has gone into this.
It's got a very Cheka flavour, though, doesn't it? It's, you know, a throwback to the 2017-2018 teams when Gennier and Foley were basically the first, not the first two, but one of the first two guys picked there. The new selectors have come in, Scott Johnson and Michael O'Connor, and have rocked the boat a bit there with the selections. I believe Gennier and Foley haven't started a test together this year. I know Bernard played at 10 against Samoa, and then before that was in the Joburg test to start the Rugby Championship. Nick White's sort of been given a start in most of those tests. Well, again, he started in Brisbane, perhaps. I think he did. So, look.
He did. Do you know the last time they started a test together, I believe? Millennium Stadium.
Yeah.
9-6 loss.
As Bernard went to inside centre, didn't he, for that Italy and England game. So, 9-6 result that day. Look. Wales have said today, Warren Gatland said that he thinks that they'll kick a lot more. You know, whether he thinks, you know, Nick and Bernard's kicking game is superior to Nick White and Christian Olifano is one thing, but, you know, he did speak about the fact that Kirtley Beale out of that starting 15, maybe Australia lack a little bit of potency in attack. So, but
I like that.
Yeah,
like
expects that. Kirtley to come on reasonably early, though, as he has done in the past. But he's only been benched 3 times since the last World Cup. There was, I can't recall off the top of my head when they were, but definitely in the spring tour last year for a game.
I like Kirtley Beale on the bench. I use it in my copy a lot, the super sub role. He's so versatile, and at the end of a game, if he's in form, at the end of a game when defences and bodies are tiring, Kirtley can wreak havoc and really change the picture, to use the Checker favourite phrase, and I don't mind that at all. I know back then in 2015, Israel Folau was starting at fullback, but again, he didn't have a great World Cup in 2015, is he? He was a bit hampered by little niggles, injury niggles, and Kirtley was devastating. Bernard was devastating in 2015.
Oh, yeah, he was confident. So, and with the boot, obviously that kick against Scotland in the quarter, one of the biggest kicks in his career, saved Australia from the brink of disaster and going out in a quarter final, and he's going to need to be having some serious accuracy with the boot. I mean, they've
kicked. You've got some numbers, don't you, on the kicking? It's worth talking about, spending a little bit of time on.
Yeah, well, I mean, the last 3 tests, the Wallabies have kicked 6 from their last 15. There was a couple of misses in the Auckland Bledisloe.
40%.
40%. That's terrible, isn't it? Mick Byrne.
That is averaged out over about 3 different kickers, maybe even 4.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's quite amazing that you've got. Last week you had Reece Hodge obviously took a kick after Christian copped a knock to the eye, and then also Matt Tamu was kicking them at the end. Kirtley Beale has been known to kick from time to time, but none of those 4 players are in the starters. So up to the plate, Bernard Foley, who's going to have to be very accurate. Dan Bigger will be just absolutely trying to pop them from wherever on Sunday here in Tokyo. So that's a major, major thing the Wallabies need to get sorted, aside from other things, of course.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the lasting recent memory of Bernard Foley and a kicking tee is the Samoa game in Sydney, where he had an absolute mare of a night with the boot. He mentioned that. I mean, let's talk about how great a character Bernard Foley is. Say what you like about his form at the moment. When he walks into a media conference room, a journo can kind of sit back, relax, and be assured that he'll, you know, bring a sense of humour and a sense of a lack of ego to the microphone. You can put the tough questions to him. You can say, hey, how's it been? And he'll kind of answer you pretty honestly. And he said, one of the interesting things he said about the Samoa game was that that was when they'd been kicking. So they'd come back from the fitness camp in Noumea, and in Noumea they'd been using World Cup balls. So he'd been kicking with World Cup balls and playing with them, and then at Bankwest Stadium in Parramatta, that went back to the conventional ball, and, you know, apparently that was really different. So he actually said that that really affected his accuracy.
The other thing too with Bernard, just, you know, he obviously made a joke today at his press conference that Christian Olifano had given him the black eye, which he was sporting. Obviously not. You had a chat to him after and he said it was Jack Dempsey. But look, Bernard, you know, you and I have written some good and some bad things about Bernard over the years, but he's always, I don't know about you, but he's always been very polite to me. He'll always come up and have a chat. It's been, you know, post games when he'll have a drink with you. So look.
He's just a professional.
Yeah,
he's just a professional. And you also get a sense that he has a life outside the game and understands that you do too. And so, yeah, he's just a bit of a treat to deal with, and I personally hope he comes out fighting. I think there's a real sense of the unknown about this game and the Wallabies the Wallabies' performances. And it's another nice little deflection tactic. I mean, you make four changes in your back line, dump your starting 10 for the past few tests from the squad, and all of a sudden that's all people are talking about. And I think fundamentally what this will come down to, as it does in every test match, is a forward pack that's on song. And particularly when you come up against the Welsh forwards and a guy like Alan Wynne-Jones, their captain, their second rower, on 100, about to bring up 130 tests, the Australian lineout, you know, all eyes will be on that. And what, they were at about 90% against Fiji, 19 out of 21 lineouts they won. But this was a really interesting thing because Isaac Rodder, the lineout caller, is working with a different back row, and, you know, David Pocock coming in for the first time last week and changing the look of the forward pack. And now Izzy Naisirani, all of a sudden, you know, at the start of the year, had to learn to start jumping in the lineout. This is a guy who hasn't before. And so this isn't you cannot by any stretch of the imagination call this an experienced Australian lineout. This is very much still a work in progress.
But you've got a bench that has 419 tests between them. Australia's benches over the last few years haven't been blessed with, you know, stacks and stacks of test caps. When you've got James Slipper, 92 tests, Kobe Kepu, 107, even Adam Coleman's racked up 35 tests in the last sort of 3.5 years, Nick White, 27, Matt Tamuah, 48, Kirtley Beall, 88 tests. You compare that to Wales's bench, where they got 167 caps, sort of the best part of 250 more than them. Be very, very crucial. I'm yet to make a tip for the game, but look, I think it'll be reasonably tight, and then the last 20 will decide it, similar to Fiji.
I'm gonna call Australia by 5, but I don't think it'll be a 9-6 issue or a 12-6.
I hope not.
I think both teams will score, and I think we're looking more like sort of 2015 or 1914. Hopefully, even more than that, but we'll see. It's we're getting quite long in the tooth here, or long in the podcast, but we should just touch on Hodge again.
Yep.
Australia now has, and it's actually, you get 48 hours to appeal a judicial decision, and that's actually from the written judgment. So by 1 p.m. on Saturday, they will have to have made a call.
Surely they would have done it ASAP. I know Czech today said he's up to Reese, but for him to be any chance of playing, would they not be wanting to do that as soon as possible?
I'm not sure. I get the sense they're wanting to see, you know, how public opinion can shape the narrative. They certainly blamed public opinion or social media opinion on the citation in the first place. So I think maybe that's playing into it. I feel for Reece Hodge. We've already said this, but his parents are here. They're here for the first two games, so at least they watched him score a try against Fiji, but he's got his parents here. I think the stat is that since he's been playing since he's 7, and he's had 2 yellow cards, you know, since the age of 7. But listen, I've also talked to footy players who say that, or former footy players who say that he had time to lower his body. So that's lesson learned, I think. And look, I think also we get a bit one-eyed here in Australia, but it's important to point out that the Samoan player Ray Lilo also copped 3 weeks for his atrocity against his high tackle against a Russian player. And we also on Thursday night saw the first red card of the tournament, John Quill from the USA red carded, and that incident was in the opening kind of moments of their loss to England.
Yeah, and 3 weeks.
Yeah, so I do think, you know, we're going to see, it won't be the last red card we see, I'm pretty sure, and it won't be the last ban either.
Absolutely. Hopefully this isn't the last podcast. Hopefully we keep cracking on. I think the ratings are okay, and thank you for all your feedback. We always love it, as always. tomorrow it'll be Saturday, a bit weird not being a test day, usually on Saturdays. Obviously the game is on Sunday. We'll be heading out to the stadium to check it all out. Wales and Australia will have their final chats before the game. It'll all be there on Rugby Heaven for you to consume however you want to. Anything else on that note, G?
No, in the 21st minute of the podcast, I think we'd better wrap it up and hope that this audio quality is okay for producer Dave.
God bless Dave. We'll catch you around.
Thanks for listening, folks.
Sayonara.